Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon and happy Tuesday to everyone tuning into the show today. My name is Beth Schenkel Anderson, and you're listening to the Success Design Radio Show. My special guest today is Bob Williamson. Bob is a true rags-to-riches story about a man who overcame homelessness and addiction to become a multimillionaire. Bob has a new book, Miracle on Lucky Street, which you'll definitely want to check out, where he describes his rise from life on the streets to owning 11 successful companies. So welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
Oh, absolutely. It's an honor to have you on the show. Why don't we start about you letting you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Where I started and all that?
Yeah, just tell us just briefly, just sort of give us an overview of you and your life and how you got to be where you are today.
Okay. Well, my childhood was pretty dark. I went to 19 different schools, and I was in trouble constantly. I started drinking when I was 12 and was an alcoholic by the time I was 15. And I got addicted to drugs at 17 and was married and divorced with a child. And I was pretty mean. I was always in fights and so forth. And just kind of a wild kid, hitchhiked and hop freights all over the United States. And I went into the service and I got into some serious trouble and I was court-martialed. I ended up in a prison up in New York and they moved me down to Mississippi. And when I got ready to go to court, my defense sent me to a hospital there, a military hospital, and six psychiatrists examined me, and they diagnosed me as being a sociopath. And he asked me if I knew what that was. I said no, and he said, "Well, you're well on your way to becoming a serial killer. That I had all the tendencies of one, and that I was incapable of love, and didn't have a conscience, and was very aggressive and so forth." And so I asked him what I could do about it. And he said there was nothing I could do about it, that it was incurable. So they kicked me out of the military. And so I became an intravenous drug user and became a meth addict, which is a very dangerous place to be. I was using meth and staying up a week at a time, and then I would use heroin to come down. I had a .357 Magnum, and I was committing armed robberies and doing all kinds of crimes. And I ended up in Parrish Prison for possession of heroin. And I stayed in there for a while, and then I got out on a technicality and started right back where I'd left off. And I actually OD'd on meth twice, and my liver quit functioning. But I found out that the police were looking for me. I was living in New Orleans at the time, and they had a sweep in the French Quarter looking for me. And I had gotten tipped off from a guy, so I beat it out of town and hitchhiked up to Atlanta just on a whim. I didn't know anybody in Atlanta, and I didn't have any friends or family or anybody. And so when I arrived up there, I was homeless and penniless, and sold a pint of blood, and I ended up on a street called Lucky Street, L-U-C-K-I-E. And that's where I got the name of the book, Miracle on Lucky Street. But I took a job with some winos cleaning bricks with a hatchet where they could be reused for $15 a day. And when I got enough money together, I borrowed a car and went out and proceeded to get drunk and had a head-on collision. And it was a very serious one. I very nearly died. I ended up in Grady Memorial Hospital, which is a charity hospital in Atlanta, and had numerous operations. But I survived, and I've always been an insomniac since I was a little child. I only sleep about 3 hours a night, so to pass the time, I've always read just hundreds, if not thousands, of books. So I befriended a nurse there at Grady, and she agreed to stop by the library and check out books for me and while I was recovering. And the librarian started sending me a list of all the bestsellers, and I would check out the ones I wanted, and then she would bring them to me. But I kept noticing that the Bible was the number one best-selling book in the world. And I had never really read the Bible. I didn't really believe in God. I thought if there was a God, he was mean, and I didn't want anything to do with him. And I was just very agnostic and full of hate, and I had messed around with witchcraft while I was down in New Orleans, and but the reason I read it, I decided to disprove it. I'd had people that had talked to me about it, and I just wanted to read it for myself so I could have some ammunition to make fun of them. And so I started reading the Old Testament, and I found it too boring to read, but I noticed the nurse had given me her personal Bible, and she had marked up a lot of the New Testament, so I went over to it, and I read it. And as I started reading it, I was very surprised to find that Jesus Christ was nothing like I thought he was. I thought, I don't know what I thought, but he was very compassionate, and all my life, people had told me that I would never amount to anything, my parents, my teachers, the police, the military, everybody, and I really believed that myself, and I was very suicidal. I hated life, and I used to tell people all the time, I wish I hadn't been born dead, but as it turned out, he wasn't condescending. He was just full of compassion, hung out with people. I mean, they weren't quite as bad as me, but they were pretty bad, some of them. And then I got to a point where I read Philippians 4:13 that said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, that really made me mad. I slammed it shut and threw it on the bed and rang for my nurse, and I told her, I said, just get this out of here. It's nothing but a lie. And she looked at me, and she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it says right here I can do anything through Christ. And I said, I'm a meth addict. And I said, less than 2% of anybody who ever puts a needle in their arm ever gets off it. And saying, I can do all things. I said, I could never change my life. I'm going to die and be buried in a pine box like all my friends and people I've known. And I told her it was just baloney. And she was a great big old African-American lady. Her name was Lydia. She stood there and put her hands on her hip, and she said, Jesus is God. He can do anything he wants. He made the blind see. He cured the leper. He walked on water. He fed 5,000 people. And he raised Lazarus from the dead. And if he can do all that, he can change your sorry tale. So, and then she just stalked out of there, and I laid back down, and I got to thinking about it. And the next morning, I was supposed to have a real serious operation, 12 hours, and the doctor came in and told me, made me sign a bunch of waivers that I could die and all that. But anyway, I just accepted Christ right then as my Savior. I had been taking notes as I'd read through it and went back to one and said, if you want to see heaven, you have to be born again. And so, you know, I accepted Christ and, of course, survived the operation. And you know, I can't say that I was hit by a lightning bolt or that my chain fell off. I mean, I still wanted drugs and to drink, and it was But I had changed. I mean, before that occurred, I was very hard and bitter, and I could have shot somebody right between the eyes and never thought twice about it. But I completely changed at that point in my heart. So when I got out of the hospital, I was on crutches for 2 years, and I met a girl that was just the opposite of me. She'd never been in any trouble or didn't take drugs or drink or anything. And I just didn't tell her anything about my past, and we started dating. And I married her, and I got off drugs. I didn't go to rehab. I just continued reading the Bible, and I used the Bible as my step-by-step guide, not only for personal redemption, but for personal and also for my business success. And we've been married 41 years, got three sons. They're all college graduates. I didn't ever get any formal education. But my sons are all married and went to Georgia. Did you say so?
Oh, I was just going to say, so you, the woman that you met and married, you're still married to today,
yeah,
for 41 years. Wow, that's very impressive. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But I didn't have any kind of a resume, as you can imagine, so I had to start at the very bottom. That was all right with me. I figured I deserved it, and so I took the worst job in a big paint plant in Atlanta, a 17-acre paint plant, and I worked in a little small room down in the dungeon. But I was the first one there, the last one to leave, and I was very industrious. I figured out a way to save them a considerable amount of money on paint labels, so they promoted me, and then they promoted me again and again and again. I was promoted 8 times in 2 years, all the way up into plant management. And that verse, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me," became my life verse. So I told my wife and everybody that I wanted to start my own business. Well, everybody told me that I would fail and that no way I could do it. But I just said to myself, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." And I quit my job and borrowed $1,000 on a credit card and started a business in my basement. I invented a paint that was like a technological breakthrough for airbrush artists. I actually developed it for myself because I'm an artist as a hobby. And in about 6 months, it was a multi-million-dollar business. I had 268,000 customers around the world, 7 distributors, and I went from making $30,000 a year to $30,000 a week, and it was a tremendous amount of temptation and so forth, and it was very hard for me to deal with that, and I almost went off the deep end several times, but I weathered those storms, And I went on from there to found 11 more successful companies. The last one I sold for $75 million. Didn't have any debt. And then it was a software company. And the name of it was Horizon Software International. And then I wrote my book. After that, I got bored, and I bought a 4,700-acre plantation in northern Florida near Tallahassee.
We were just discussing that before we came on the air about how beautiful it is out at your plantation, and what a great place it would be for me and my husband to visit one day.
Yeah, it's a great place. We put spiritual retreats and corporate retreats and have a lot of weddings and just retreats for people. Individuals come out. We have 91,000 square feet of and conference centers and lodging, and we have a spa and a salon, a nail center, and a business center. And we have our own church here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's great. And it's beautiful. It's got the oldest stained glass windows in the state of Florida, and it's, the pews are date back to the 1800s. It's built to look like an old time church, but I found in life that, you know, I gave a seminar back in November on success, and I told them the dictionary defines success as the attainment of wealth, fame, and power. And I said, that's not true, because I know plenty of wealthy, famous, and powerful people that are miserable, and miserable to me doesn't define success. And what I found is you can't find success in a needle or putting something up your nose or in a bedroom or a bar room or in a bank account or a private jet or a yacht or a grand dome, that it can only be found through God. And I define success as just really knowing peace and joy and love in your life. And I've got that now, and it's a lot different than when I was growing up, when I was all alone. I didn't really have a friend until I was probably 30 years old. So, well, that's my story and kind of how it evolved to where I am today.
Yeah, that's a profound story, and thank you for sharing it. Let's talk about your book some. It's called Miracle on Lucky Street. Lucky is spelled L-U-C-K-I-E. And I presume this book is autobiographical?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It kind of details it. It's written the way it was really on the street, the beginning of it. I wanted to show... the book is really not about me. The book is about the power of God to transform somebody's life. And I wrote it in order to give hope to people. I have a ministry now, and I'm involved with the Bill Glass Prison Ministry, and then I speak all over the country. I speak to a lot of business people and spoke at Inc. magazine and so forth, but what I find all over the country, from Anchorage to Key West, is that so many people have lost hope. And actually, the figures, if you do research on it, is 82% of people in the country have lost hope on something, either a marriage or a son or a brother or something, the economy, the government. But my book is about hope, and that everybody should have hope, because I can tell you, if I could do what I've done, I mean, starting where I started, I've been in all kinds of prison. I just got back from one out in Texas, and I've been on death row. I've seen all kinds of people, and I don't think I've ever met anybody that was in much worse shape than I was. I mean, I was... total drug addict, severe alcoholic, and criminal, and no conscience, no love, nothing. And go from that to where I am today is quite remarkable. And it just shows people who have given up on various things, it can turn around. It can happen very quickly. I didn't start my first business, I don't think, until I was about 35. And 6 months later, I was a multimillionaire. So I don't judge success by money at all. I think you could have the same amount of success in a mobile home. It's just knowing peace and joy and love. And I think it's available.
Hope.
I'm sorry?
And having hope. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but... And having that hope.
Yes, and hope just the only way the Bible says it comes from God. I write a daily devotional. It's called Words for the Day. It's free. It's wordsfortheday.org. I've been writing it for 12 years. And every day, I get up usually very early, like 1:30 or 2 in the morning, and the first thing I do every day is read the Bible, and I study it. And whatever is going on in my life, that's I try to find the answers to my problems in the Bible. And then I write about it, and I send out this devotional. I started it by sending it just to my employees, but now it goes all over the world, and people in India and Tokyo and everywhere. But that's what I recommend to people. I didn't have formal education. I didn't go to Wharton Business School or Harvard, and I never been to a marriage counselor or anything like that. But I find all the answers to my question in the Bible and then just in common sense. And, you know, like when I started my companies, everybody's got to have a mission statement, or they should. So I just thought to myself, I said, well, if Jesus Christ came to earth and he wanted to start a business, what would his mission statement be? And I thought, well, he came to serve mankind. And so the number one thing in my mission statement is to provide outstanding customer service. And then second, I thought he would have high-quality products. So I try to make my products as high quality as I can, and then fair prices, fair to him, fair to me. And then work together in a spirit of honesty, integrity, and pride. And so just everything that happens, whether I have a tragedy occur in my life, my brother committed suicide not long ago, and dealing with something like that, you can always go to the Bible and you can find your peace. And or if you have something wonderful happen, you can go to the Bible and you can understand how you should be thankful for your blessings and so forth. So that's pretty much, I put God number one in my life, and then second to that is my family, and then my career, and my health, and just try to prioritize things. So it's worked out, you know, pretty well for me. And
yeah, I would say you're definitely an inspiration to all those you speak to. Certainly you are to me. How do you hope your story will help others?
Well, I've got a drawer full of letters of people that were 5 minutes away from committing suicide that read something I wrote either in Words for the Day or else in my book, and wrote to me, and they changed their mind. I have people every day. I get hundreds of letters from people that are encouraged by my story because, again, I don't know anybody that's ever been any worse off than I was. And there's nothing really special about me. I have a lot of interviews. I've had over 700. I've been on TV and radio and all that. And they always seem to want to make it out like I'm some real intelligent, articulate, charismatic person. I'm really not. I mean, I'm the same person I was when I was 24 years old and I hitchhiked into, you know, Atlanta as a hardcore criminal. And I just think that hope is available to everybody. The Bible tells us that. It preaches it. I will say this. I have learned a lot about that verse. I can do all things through Christ. One thing is, it doesn't say, now that I'm a Christian, Christ will do everything for me. It says, I can do. So we have to do our part. And I'm a very hard worker. I have a very strong work ethic. And even today, when I don't have to work, I'm still the first one in the office, the last one to leave. I'm very passionate about my work. And then all things. Does that really mean all things? I don't think so, because what if I wanted to start a drug cartel or a pornography empire? I don't think God would bless that. I think it's all things within his will for our lives. So I really believe that if people will have faith and that they will make an effort and not just sit around and wait for somebody to come, hit the lottery or inherit something. It's not going to happen, not to most of us. So, I mean, there's just, we have to take, you know, God gave us a brain and he gave us ability. And I think, you know, the Bible says that God thought about us before he even created the world. So eons and eons ago, he thought about us. And it says even the hairs on our heads are numbered.
Mm-hmm.
And he created us for a purpose, and that's his purpose. And he wants us to accomplish that. And he's given us all the skills, the looks, the attributes of everything that we need to accomplish what he wants us to accomplish. And if we do it, then we're, you know, the closer we can come to accomplishing his will for his life, for our lives, the happier we're going to be and the more peace we're going to know and joy we're going to have and the love. And so I think that my story, the book, Words for the Day, or When I Speak, or whatever, it radiates out God's love. And one thing that people should understand, all of society looks at people the way they are. So like if I'd have walked into an average church back when I was 24 years old, they probably would have kicked me out of there. I had hair down below my shoulders, and it was greasy, and I had tracks all over my arms, and a glazed look in my eyes, and a very mean, hard, cold look in my eyes. But Jesus doesn't look at us the way we are. He looks at us as to what we can be. He saw past all that, and he saw potential there, and not only the way I am today, but when I'm perfected after I pass on and into heaven. So I think it's very important. People are very judgmental, and I think that held me back, you know, when I was very young, and I got to believe in it, as I said earlier. But I can guarantee you that God doesn't look at us that way, and he loves us. He loves everybody. He loves those prisoners that are in a prison. He loves people that have made mistakes, that are involved in some dark sin, whatever it might be. I mean, and he wants to forgive us, but, I mean, we just have to, you know, make that move and trust him and have some faith. And I think that if I do anything, it's just encourage people not to give up. I get so many letters. I got one yesterday from a lady. Her son had a DUI, and he got convicted of vehicular homicide or manslaughter or something. Anyway, he got 25 years. He's incarcerated here in Florida. And she said, well, his life's over. He'll never be the same and all this. And I wrote her back, and I said, listen, I wouldn't give up. God hasn't given up on him. Maybe he's just going through a time and learning some lessons, and when he gets out, there's no telling what he might be. And I think if he believes that and she believes it, and, you know, that it can happen. I'm a great believer in miracles, and my whole life has been a miracle. I mean, who would have thought that I'd be married for 41 years to the same person, you know? And all my kids are college educated and very happily married, very successful in businesses of their own, and their wives are just wonderful Christian women. They've got 7 grandkids. 2 of them are here right now, my twin granddaughters, so life's good.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. I was getting ready to say that. Life is certainly treating you well right now.
Yeah.
So that's great to hear. Let me ask you a few questions about addiction. Because it affects so many people. How do you, or what do you think causes someone to become an addict?
Well, I think that, for one thing, addiction, nobody ever set out to become a drug addict or an alcoholic or a you know, addicted to pornography or whatever. I think it just starts out as kind of an experimentation type of a thing and peer pressure a lot of times. A lot of times somebody will do something relatively mild, like drink a few beers, and then somebody will pull out a joint and they'll smoke it and they'll say, oh, man, this isn't anything at all like what I thought. You know, this is pleasant. And then maybe the next thing they do, somebody will pull out some cocaine or some speed or LSD or ecstasy or crack or something. And then, you know, addiction, taking drugs makes you feel good. Now, if you can multiply the best you've ever felt by maybe a million, that's what it's like to take something like heroin or meth or crack or something. It's just the best feeling. You can't even imagine it. Actually, there's no words to describe it. And it's very deceiving because you want that feeling again, so you try to take it again, and you can't quite get to where you were before. It's still good, but not quite as good. So you try to take a little more. And then this just keeps happening, and you take more and more and more to get less and less and less. And before you know it, you turn around, and you're a full-bore drug addict, and you're just taking it to try to stay normal and not be climbing the walls. And alcoholism is the same thing. It's a very progressive thing. I don't call it a disease because I don't think it is a disease. I think it's a choice initially. But once you become addicted, it's extremely hard to get out. And I just don't think it can happen unless you have a spiritual... I'm not necessarily saying, I mean, with me, I had to have Jesus Christ. Maybe somebody else can just have a higher being, but that's what it took for me. And but I think some people have a propensity for it, and from what I understand, it is hereditary to, you know, I mean, 42% of families right now have an alcoholic in them.
Oh, wow.
10% of our population is addicted right now.
10%.
And 10% of our total population is addicted.
Mm.
And the bad thing about it is a lot of those are teenagers, and 80% of them don't even seek treatment. So it's very, very difficult to get up. Now, I didn't go to AA. I didn't go to NA. Those are good organizations. I've spoken at a lot of their meetings and so forth to various people and different rehab centers. And I've met people like all over the United States that are addicted, but I've never met anybody that wanted to be an addict or wanted to be an alcoholic. And
oh, sure.
They just got sucked into it, you know.
Yeah, I think it probably happens before they know it.
People on the street. I make that clear. I mean, the biggest addiction right now, the fastest growing one, is prescription medication. There's a lot of housewives and soccer moms and businessmen. I just had a friend of mine that he's a friend now. He went the opposite of me. He was very successful at his own business, and he started taking cocaine. He ended up, he lost his family, his kids, his job, started stealing, ended up in prison.
Mm.
And he read my book and heard me speak at a commencement ceremony somewhere, and he met a guy in jail, a prison minister, and accepted the Lord. Now he's going to Liberty Bible College. So his name's Dutch Nelson, and he's quite a story. He was very successful and just kind of the opposite. But it strikes people of all calibers. I mean, I've known some of the wealthiest people in the world, and not only are they addicted, all their kids are. So it's not just urchins out on the street, you know. I mean,
sure.
It's a lot of people.
A lot of behind closed doors.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with coke, and it's just, you know, I mean, let me look at Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson. They have everything, and that's, again, where I go back to wealth, fame, and power. I mean, people look. A lot of people win the lottery, and 3 months later they commit suicide because they just say, well, is this all there is? And they find out that the money and all that just... It's they're still miserable. So you have to have God in your life. I mean, people ask me about it all the time, and they look at me. It's not fashionable to say that. It's politically incorrect and whatever, but this is real. This is a real story. You know, I mean, I was in prison. I've seen people drop dead right in front of me many times, and it can, and I've met a lot of people on the street that were very intelligent. I mean, 140 IQ stuff that are sleeping in the gutter out there. So it can happen, and it can happen quick. And, you know, so it's a dangerous thing to mess with. And the biggest thing I think that parents could do is talk to their kids and let their kids know that they love them, and that if they make a mistake, forgive them, and try to work with them, and if they get addicted, then get them into rehab. There's a lot of good ones out there. Teen Challenge is one of them. But it's a commitment. It takes a long time, depending on how long they've been addicted, and a lot of times they'll have relapses two or three times. I know I tried to quit several times, and always the day I'd get out, I'd be right back on it. So.
You, on your website, you also say that money became an addiction for you. How was that?
I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I went from making $30,000 a year to $30,000 a week to $100,000 a week to $200,000 a week. And you have that much money, all these people start hanging around you, and they all... tell you how smart you are, and you're real powerful, and it just goes to your head, and you know you've got all these beautiful girls that are hitting on you all the time, and I mean I'd have $50,000 in my pocket, but and you know kind of riding around in a Porsche, and if I wanted to put one on each arm and fly to Paris and then go to Amsterdam and then go to Vegas, I could have done that on a private jet with a trash can full of cocaine. And it's, you know, people think that money is the answer to everything. It's not. It's a huge temptation. You know, I mean, I had thought seriously about leaving my family and taking that path. Fortunately, I came to my senses. I think I had a little help from God. He pulled the rug out of me a couple times and woke me up. But I'll tell you something that happened to my brother. My brother didn't turn out as good as me, and I was very successful, and he wasn't. His youngest daughter was 15. She got pregnant, wasn't married, got pregnant again at 17, still not married. Then his older daughter was 19, and she was stripping down in the Bourbon Street and was a hooker and tried to commit suicide. And he'd been married 3 or 4 times and was playing in bands down there, and then one day he called me, and he was crying, and he had found his current wife nearly dead. She'd taken an overdose of pills and tried to commit suicide herself. So when you do that, they put you in the psych ward for 30 days for evaluation. So he told me he went up there to see her, and she told him that when she got out, she was going to leave him. Well, this was just devastating to him. It was like his fourth marriage, and he just couldn't handle it anymore, and he said, I just don't understand it, Bob. You and I have the same looks. We have the same intellect. We came out of the same womb. We had the same upbringing. And he said, look at you. Look how you've turned out. He said, both your kids are college graduates. They're happy. You're happily married and have been for decades. Your career's blossomed, and you're doing great. And look at me. He said, my whole life's a wreck. My kids are a wreck. And I told him, I said, well, Jim, there's one difference between us. I've got God in my life, and you don't. So I told him to go out to the airport, and I'd have some plane tickets waiting for him, and he flew up. And I took him down to see my pastor in Atlanta. He got down on his knees. He accepted Christ as his Savior. And he spent the next 2 weeks with me. I took him to Borders and bought him a Bible and taught him how I study it and got him all going. And he looked like a different person when he flew out of here. And he went back and he reconciled with his wife. She saw the difference in him. And the next weekend they went down, his wife and his little boy and him, and all got baptized together. And then he completely turned his life around. He started hunting and fishing. He bought a boat. I went down there, went fishing with him. He was reading the Bible and going to church. Well, at the time, I was CEO of about, I think, 7 companies, and I was traveling all over. And I'd call him all over the United States, wherever I was, from whatever city. And I started noticing a difference in him, and I asked him, I said, Jim, something wrong? And he says, well, my wife went down to the casinos and she ran all my credit cards up. Now I'm out playing in bands again, trying to make some extra money. And I told him, I said, Jim, are you going to church? No. I said, are you reading your Bible? No, I don't even know where it is. I said, let me tell you something. You can't turn your back on God. You have to stay in there. And the Bible says you got to have the full armor of God. That's reading the Bible, prayer, fellowship with other Christians, having faith, doing the right thing. Yeah, I know. Well, and when I tried to call him from then on, he would never answer the phone. He'd see it was me. So I was in Chicago. It was a real blustery night, snowing. I was trying to get the last plane out. And I heard my cell phone ring. My wife called me, told me that he had just killed himself. He shot himself in the head. So.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
The moral of that, though, is it's one thing to turn to God, and he will heal you, but you have to stay in there, and that's what I had to learn about the money and the achievements and all of that. It wasn't me doing it. It was blessings from God because I was obeying him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that what people have to understand is this is not a one-time event, you know. I mean, you have to, each day, the Bible teaches there's a spiritual warfare going on. Satan and God are fighting for our souls. And I think that it's very true. And I think he comes at us in any number of ways. I mean, he knows where you're weak, if it's, you know, whatever it is, if it's alcohol or sex or power or fame or money or whatever it is, he tries to come at people in different ways. And that's what I found. It's not easy to have a lot of money, particularly if you've never had any before. You got to remember, I was sleeping on the side of the road and eating in missions and sleeping up under bridges and, you know, and to go from that to eating the finest restaurants, staying in the finest hotel, flying around in private jets, it just all went to my head for a period of time there, and I had to fight my way through that. And I chronicle that in my book.
Right.
But I had to surrender.
Surrender yourself. And even when you were making the money, that was certainly something that you you had to fight some temptations with that as well. So
yeah,
we only have about a minute left on the show, and I wanted to recite the website again, which is www.miracleonluckystreet.com. Lucky is spelled L-U-C-K-I-E, and that's where you can find Bob's book, as well as you can read the first chapter of his book, which is very intriguing and leaves you with a cliffhanger. So, Bob, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today and taking the time to share your amazing story. You're a true inspiration. It's been an honor to have you on my show.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I appreciate you asking me, and I hope you found it interesting.
I absolutely did, and you go on making those miracles with God by your side.
I'll do that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Bob.
Okay,
and this
bye-bye.
Is Beth Schenkel Anderson with the Success Design, and I'm signing off. Thanks for listening.